Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Busted by Gina Chalka. Narrated by Amy Melissa Bentley. 1. Scaling the back of a house, Spider-Man style, hadn't been a part of my Saturday night plans. Yet, there I was, clinging to the ivy-swathed lattice above the garage of a house I'd never been to, peering through the window of a rec room dominated by an oversized leather couch, which was occupied by a boy whose name I couldn't remember, as he made out with a girl I'd never met. 2 pints of abandoned vanilla ice cream sat on the end table next to them. The vanilla ice cream that had started it all. 2 pints of Fudgy's ice cream were slowly turning into soup in the front seat of my car because of these two. If I hadn't been in line behind... What the hell was his name? Greg? George? My double order of sexual chocolate. Yes, really. And I would be on our way to Charlie's house for a Saturday movie, gossip, and anti-nutrition night like so many Saturdays before. Except, as I stood there waiting to pay, wondering, where do I know this kid from and why don't I like him? It clicked. I'd met the tall, lanky blonde boy once. Albeit briefly, at a football game I'd gone to at Charlie's school to watch her cheer. He'd been draped over the fence, flirting with her between routines. When he saw me approaching, he had given me a lazy once-over and sent a half-hearted nod in my direction before taking off. It was him, all right. Longish nose, small mole on his left cheek. Check, check. But between the way I'd kept my face warm by burying it inside the collar of my winter jacket that night, and his disinterested lack of eye contact, he must not have remembered me at all. Because when his eyes darted over to me as he stuffed his wallet into his back pocket after paying for his pints, they didn't show a trace of recognition. This was Charlie's boyfriend. The guy she went out of her way not to talk about, because she insisted their relationship was no big deal. Yet we'd been dress shopping that very afternoon for a dance he'd asked her to, and she'd tried to hide the dejected look on her face as she'd held a half-zipped, sparkly blue dress around her torso and scanned his last-minute text message canceling their date tonight. I wondered if he planned to drop by with ice cream to make it up to her. Until I watched his 2 pints of ice cream, Vanilla Bean Dream, disappear into a brown paper bag. I whipped up my phone and sent Charlie a text. Did you change your mind about vanilla ice cream? Her response came seconds later. I would not waste energy swallowing ice cream without chocolate, and you know this. That's what I thought. Curiosity, mixed with a bit of admittedly premature disgust and indignation, welled inside me. And just like that, I knew I had to follow him. 10 minutes later, I'd wound up parked in front of a white colonial with carefully tended flower beds lining the walkway and pillars flanking the front door. It could have been his house for all I knew, but I'd had to circle the block while he parked, and my little detour hadn't allowed me to see how he got in. I'd hoped he'd lived there, and that the vanilla ice creams were for him and his mother. And maybe tomorrow, I'd wake up a monkey. Or a spider, as it stood. The diamond-shaped wood lattice serving as my foothold groaned softly as I maneuvered my cell phone out of my back pocket. There were probably bugs galore in that ivy, and I didn't even want to think about bigger, hairier creatures that might also be present. My biggest concern was whether the chipped, splintering strips could hold 116 pounds of prying teenage girl long enough for me to get what I came for. All I could see of Greggy George and Mystery Blonde were their heads on the armrest of the couch, eyes closed, mouths sealed together, oblivious to the television and me, their captive audience. My lips tightened, and the desire to punch him, or bang on the window and give him the finger, flared up inside me. I didn't do either of those things, of course. Instead, I angled my phone toward the two of them, kissing like they were going for the gold in the makeout Olympics, and snapped a picture. And realized too late that I hadn't turned off the flash. Greggy George's dumbfounded face shot up over the back of the couch. It was the last thing I saw before I gasped and ducked to the side of the window, and before my cell phone slipped out of my hand, landing below with a rustle and a smack. "Shit," I hissed.
"What was that?"
Mystery Blonde's muffled voice came from inside the house.
"Probably nothing," he replied. "Maybe it's your stupid cat."
"Go check. What if there's a raccoon in the yard and Mozart ends up with rabies?"
Shit, shit, shit. My fingers curled around the wood diamonds until they ached, and I pressed myself as flat against the house as I could, face buried in the ivy like a child in time out, fervently hoping that if I couldn't see him, he couldn't see me. The light shifted as his frame filled part of the window. I refused to look, but I felt his presence, like he was standing right beside me, ready to drop a bag over my head. A second later,
"There's nothing out there. If Mozart's foaming at the mouth next time you see him, just shoot him."
I went limp with relief as the window brightened with his retreat. Mystery Blonde's responding giggles died down, and I could only imagine they'd picked up where they'd left off, because I sure as hell wasn't sticking around to find out. I climbed down the lattice as fast as I could, reminding myself to find secure footholds for my black flats so my breaking bones wouldn't become the next sound to pierce the night. My whole body shook with nerves and adrenaline by the time I stood on the ground, level with the garage windows. I frantically scanned the patio for remnants of my phone until a glint in one of the cement planters beneath the windows caught my eye. I made a mental note to never let Charlie make fun of my jeweled phone case ever again as I plucked my perfectly intact phone from its cushion of mums. A smug smile crept across my face as the screen lit up with my photo. I might have done something rash and stupid, but already it felt totally worth it. I didn't know who this guy thought he was, but he sure as hell didn't get to screw with my best friend's life. Of course, I didn't know it then, but I'd just captured the picture that would change my whole life. 2.
Char?
I burst into Charlie's kitchen, panting. Doggy nails clicked against the tile as Jelly, her rat terrier, ran in excited circles, as if I hadn't entered the house a million times before. That's the great thing about dogs. You're never old news to them.
Marissa, I was about to call you. Where the hell have you been?
Charlie appeared in the doorway between the kitchen and living room, wearing yoga pants and a sweatshirt that said, "That's Madam, bitch, to you." Cell phone in hand. Thanks to our dark hair and eyes, Charlie and I have been mistaken for sisters a few times. Granted, my hair has a natural wave to it and Charlie's is poker straight, but we're even the same height, 5 feet, 4.5 inches. Except tonight, she looked freshly showered and ready to relax, and I looked like a train wreck who'd done battle with an overgrown shrub. She eyed the brown bag in my hand that was dotted with wet spots from the melting ice cream.
"Is everything okay?"
I scooped Jelly into my arms, giving myself a second to catch my breath. "Everything is fine. I mean, everything will be fine. I mean..." I shook my head, trying to force my adrenaline-jacked thoughts into coherence. "I have some bad news." I put the dog down and held my phone against my chest. "It's kind of a long story."
"What is? Out with it."
"It's about your boyfriend."
"Jason?"
"Jason?" I was a little off with the whole Greggy George thing. And also surprised that Charlie had given up shunning use of the word boyfriend when we talked about him, which meant she was finally ready to admit how much she liked him, which made my news suck all the more. "He was at Fudgy's buying ice cream." Charlie's left eyebrow shot up.
"He's supposed to be sick in bed right now."
"Right. I thought maybe he was feeling better and bringing the ice cream here for you,
until I realized they were both vanilla. So, when he left the store, I followed him.
Followed him? What are you getting at, Palmera?
He went to someone's house. I pulled up the picture on my screen and held it out to her.
Anyone you know?
Charlie stared wordlessly, her lips pressed into a taut line.
That piece of shit, she growled.
But her voice caught on the last word, and I wished I'd given my delivery more thought.
I'm sorry, Char.
No. No, it's fine. She exhaled and straightened her shoulders.
What time does the mall close? 10?
I think so. Why? She snatched the bag from my hand, opened the cabinet beneath the kitchen sink where the trash can was located, and dumped our ice cream in it.
Change of plans. We have a dress to return.
The more I thought about it, the more I wished I'd handled breaking the news about Jason differently. It felt wrong to have told Charlie while I was on such a high, but I couldn't help it. Outing a scumbag felt more badass than anything I'd ever done, especially when I told her how I'd gotten the picture, and she looked at me like I'd parted the Red Sea. Still, by the time Monday rolled around, I continued to worry that I'd been an insensitive jerk. I didn't think I'd acted excited when I told her, but knowing I'd felt that way kept eating at me, like maybe she thought I'd trailed him for me and not her. So on Monday afternoon, I slipped out of my yearbook staff meeting a few minutes early. My brother took the bus home on days when I stayed after school, so I made my way out of the building via one of the side exits, planning to head to Charlie's house to apologize.
Marissa, hold up.
I paused at the mention of my name and the accompanying sound of sneakers slapping against concrete. TJ Caruso came flying down the stairs toward me. It took me a second to register that he'd called to me because I was so unaccustomed to hearing him speak. He transferred to Haring Cross for senior year and didn't strike me as unfriendly, just quiet. He usually sat in the back of the yearbook classroom with his feet propped up on the chair in front of him, or earnestly editing whatever interview he'd been assigned for the week. Seeing him so animated was a little weird.
Hey, he said, coming to a stop in front of me. This fell out of your pants.
Excuse me? He opened his hand. In his palm sat the silver M charm from my ankle bracelet.
Oh, no, I groaned, bending down to inch up the right leg of my jeans.
They were tight enough that they'd prevented my broken bracelet from falling off completely, but as I eased the limp strand into my hands, I saw that at least two other charms had slipped free, including my favorite glass poinsettia bead.
Did you happen to find any others?
He shook his head apologetically.
Only that one.
Seeing the dejected look on my face, he added,
"But I can take another look when I go back."
"Thanks, I appreciate it." He jogged up the steps as I contemplated going back inside to search for my charm. My mother had special ordered it for Christmas last year, and the thought of it getting swept into the janitor's dustpan and thrown out with the trash made me nauseous. Except I had no idea where to start looking. The clasp could have snapped this morning and been slowly leaking beads ever since. I'd have to retrace all my steps and...
Oh, Marissa?
TJ's voice cut into my thoughts, and I turned to see him on the landing, one hand poised on the door handle.
Is it all right if I send you my interview with Mr. LaRoche on Tuesday? I'm working a ton of hours this weekend.
I'd really like to get it locked into the layout on Monday if you can. TJ scratched his head, making a few of his dark curls dance.
Let me see what I can do. I have this other obligation that I might be able to get out of.
No, don't cancel your plans. It's not that important, I said, even though I got the feeling he kind of wanted to get out of whatever it was.
It's not something I'm looking forward to anyway.
Oh, well, good luck then.
Thanks, I'll need it.
He started toward the school again. As I clutched the remains of my ankle bracelet in my palm, I thought, you and me both. As I approached my beat-up red jalopy, I realized I needed it sooner rather than later. Because someone sat perched on the hood of the equally beaten-up car that had been backed into the space next to mine, feet propped up on the bumper, one hand resting on the faded gray metal as the other typed on a cell phone. Someone with wheat-colored hair, long, slender legs clad in black leggings crossed beneath a short jean skirt, and a cute, freckle-dotted button nose. No freaking way! I made a mental note to bump up my next eye exam, because that could not be Kendall Keene, my oldest frenemy, draped across the hood of a random car in my school's parking lot. She looked up then, as if I'd spoken her name out loud. I halted mid-step as her green eyes went big. Oh, my God. Marissa? Marissa Palmera? Kendall? What are you doing here? Her familiar smile, the one with the slightly crooked teeth that somehow made her even more adorable, lit her face. She hopped down from the car. My boyfriend goes to school here, and I thought he needed a ride, but I had the days confused. She waved her cell phone, and I assumed said boyfriend was the one she'd been texting a second ago. But I thought you moved to Arizona. I did. We moved back to Pennsylvania last year. We're living in Monroe now. That's... wow. Wow about covered it. Kendall and I had gone to school together and played on the same rec soccer team from third through sixth grade before I moved to Haring Cross. We did everything together, but our friendship operated like a race run neck and neck. If I had a new pair of shoes I couldn't wait to show off, Kendall would get the same ones and wear them first. If rumors swirled that a boy she thought was cute liked me instead, suddenly I'd find myself the lone member of our circle not invited to her sleepover. Whenever we'd get assignments back, without fail, Kendall asked what grade I got. If she'd scored higher, she'd flourish her paper and show me. If she hadn't, she'd say, "Oh," and turn away without telling me her score. By the time she and her family moved to Arizona at the end of sixth grade, we'd grown past most of the immature head-to-head, but our relationship had exhausted itself into friendly but not friends status. So the way Kendall stood there, smiling like we were lifelong BFFs, had me wondering if I'd stepped straight into some kind of time warp. "Right?" Kendall said, apparently oblivious to my speechlessness. My dad's job transferred us back last fall. Arizona was amazing, and we met so many great people and did so many cool things, and Dad got promoted, like, 3 times, but we really missed our family. She threw up her hands in a ta-da motion. And here I am. What's new with you? Until she asked the question, it had never occurred to me how little my life had changed since the last time we saw each other. Sure, my family had moved too, but 2 towns over, to a slightly larger house. My mom still taught kindergarten, my dad was still a manager at the Big M grocery store, and my brother had shot up to almost 6 feet tall, but still hadn't grown a filter between his brain and his mouth. I had no life-altering experiences to gush about. Not much, waiting to hear back from colleges, possibly planning a road trip across the country this summer with my best friend. Nothing terribly exciting. That part was sort of true. Charlie and I talked about road tripping all the time, but we never seemed to get further than what kind of food we'd need for the ride. Her eyes lit up. Are you kidding? A road trip across the country sounds super exciting. Your parents are cool with it? Yeah, so far. And your boyfriend? The corner of my mouth turned up. Non-existent, so definitely. Kendall slipped her hands behind her with a sheepish expression. Sorry, dumb question. I've been with TJ so long that I forget some people are still single. Normally, my inner fifth grader would have reared her passive-aggressive head at what felt like an obvious jab. But my interest in the other things she'd said overshadowed my defensiveness. Do you mean TJ as in TJ Caruso, the new guy? I pointed to the school like he was still standing outside, even though I knew he wasn't. Something changed in Kendall's expression, but I couldn't quite put my finger on what. It was like a wall had gone up, though I didn't know why when she'd been the one to bring up the subject. "So, you know him?" Her words sounded as carefully measured as a cup of sugar. "I wouldn't say I know him. He's on yearbook with me, but he's pretty quiet, and we've only talked about school stuff. I didn't even know he had a girlfriend." She scraped the toe of her ballet flat against a loose piece of asphalt and muttered something that sounded like, "Of course not." I couldn't help but notice the braided, caramel-colored leather bracelet that wound around her ankle. If I hadn't been so busy trying to figure out if this was some sort of strange dream, I would have been salivating over it. "So, wait," I said, slipping the remnants of my own bracelet into my bag. "If he's here, then where are you going to school?" Her sunny smile returned, and she kicked the chunk of asphalt aside, leaving me to wonder if I'd imagined her momentary funk. "Templeton Hall. I applied for the Hartley Honors Program. All the slots were full when I transferred, but they let me in anyway. Guess I got lucky."
Color me not shocked at all.
"My friend goes there. I'm actually on my way to her house right now." Charlotte Reiser. Do you know her?" The expression that passed over Kendall's face made me wonder if I'd said the wrong thing. "Charlie's in a couple of my classes," she said. "I'm working with her and Mindy Kishore on a history project, so I also know she's not home. I'm meeting them at the library as soon as I leave here." "Oh, then can you tell her to call me when you're done?" "No problem." I took a step forward, thinking we were about to say our goodbyes, head to our respective vehicles. Hers, I realized, must be the sleek black Volkswagen parked next to the aging gray Hyundai that must have belonged to TJ, and go our separate ways. Instead, she blocked my path and pointed to my bag. "So," she said brightly, "you're still into crafts, I see." I fingered the heart-shaped pin attached to the front pocket. A familiar pang rippled through my chest as the memory of my and Jordan's first kiss flashed through my mind. For the 100th time, I thought about ripping off the pin and letting it rust in a smelly landfill, since I couldn't do as much to Jordan without landing myself in jail. It's a hobby of mine. I mess around with making jewelry, earrings and necklaces and stuff. I have a ton of these pins, so I design and decorate them for people who, who what? Whose boyfriends cheated on them? I didn't even know where to go with that thought. Who like them?
Wow, so that's what a total sentence fail sounds like.
I was on my way to give Charlie hers, but I guess it will have to wait.
You made one for Charlie Reiser? Can I see it?
The instinct to clutch my bag against my abdomen and refuse kicked in immediately, like I expected her to run off with the pin and somehow claim credit for it. I nearly snorted out loud, silently chiding myself for being so childish.
Okay.
I fished around inside my bag and placed the pin I'd made for Charlie in Kendall's waiting hand. She held it close to her face, running her thumb over the tiny red and black crystals I'd arranged into alternating stripes down the length of the heart's surface. Without taking her eyes off it, she said,
"I heard you caught her boyfriend cheating."
"You did?" I blurted. I had to bite back the "how" that threatened to fly off my tongue next. She traced a row of red crystals with a cream-painted fingernail.
"Mindy mentioned it earlier today. Of course, I didn't realize that she meant Marissa as in you, Marissa. But now it all makes sense."
Mindy. Oh, I loved Charlie's Templeton wife, but sometimes she seriously needed a muzzle. The last thing Charlie would have wanted was for Jason's cheating antics to be public knowledge, and I sure as hell didn't want anyone knowing that I'd stalked him by hanging from the woodwork outside the house of his side dish.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say that. It's kind of why I'm giving her the pin. The way Kendall's eyes snapped up toward me reminded me of a window shade that had been pulled too hard.
Do you give one to everybody you help?
I didn't have a clue what she meant by that, and I had to make a conscious effort to keep my facial muscles out of WTF formation. But she was obviously waiting for an answer, so I plucked the pin from her palm and said, I make them, but it's because I like to. Going all to catch a cheater isn't really a hobby of mine, so I think the help part is a one-time thing.
Wait, I can give the pin to her if you want.
She protested as the heart disappeared into my bag.
No, that's okay.
I hoisted my bag behind my hip. I didn't know why I was suddenly picking up an ominous undertone in this conversation, but I was ready for it to be over. I see her all the time.
Kendall's hands twisted near the hem of her skirt.
Then maybe we can hang out sometime? I've always hated that we drifted apart. It would be great to start with a clean slate, like maybe grab dinner one weekend with Mindy and Charlie. They're in some of my classes, but I don't know them very well. I'd like to change that.
I immediately felt like an ass for suspecting Kendall had an ulterior motive. We weren't in fifth grade anymore. Why did I always have to assume the worst of people?
Sure, we could definitely get together sometime.
And really, there was no reason we couldn't. We'd had a lot of fun together when we were younger, when we weren't being petty, and we'd both grown up since then. I found myself thinking I might really like getting to know Kendall again. Everyone deserved a second chance, right? I didn't realize I had a smile on my face until I got into my car after Kendall and I exchanged numbers. As I drove home, my mind wandered back to the time I had gone to Myrtle Beach with her family. We'd spent a week collecting shells along the shore, trying and failing to eat popsicles before they ran down our hands and arms in sticky, melted messes, and laughing like everything we did was the funniest thing ever. The scenes were still playing in my mind like old movies when I walked into the house. Hey, Mom. I kissed my mother hello as she stood at the stove making soup.
Hi, sweetheart.
She kissed me back, then cocked her head and studied me.
Everything all right?
Mom vision never failed.
I'm fine.
She narrowed her eyes.
Are you sure? Did something happen at school?
Remember Kendall Keene?
Of course I do. What about her?
She's back from Arizona and she goes to school with Charlie. I saw her today. My mother's eyes widened, and she blinked a couple times.
Oh, she said. That's nice.
I smiled and shook my head and headed toward the stairs. Yes, Mom, it's nice. I threw my bag on the bed and walked over to my closet. On the top shelf sat a beat-up shoebox of keepsakes, awards, trinkets, my earliest attempts at sketches and crafts, one of which was a necklace I'd made from the shells I'd scavenged in Myrtle Beach with the Keens. I lifted it from the box with a wistful smile, memories hitting me like the ocean waves. Sure, the trip had started with Kendall opening her suitcase and brandishing an exact copy of my brand new bathing suit, but when I looked at that necklace with its pearlescent pinks and stark white swirls, I remembered all the happy memories we'd made on that vacation, and how much fun we'd had. As I replaced the lid and hoisted the box back into my closet, I was suddenly glad for the random turn of events that had brought us face to face again. Maybe they hadn't been so random at all. 3. About an hour later, my brother and I were sprawled on the sectional couch doing homework in our sweats when Charlie and Mindy walked in. They wore matching Templeton varsity sweatshirts, a testament to their cheerleader status, not to mention the awesomeness of Charlie's parents. Technically, she belonged at Haring Cross High with me, at least according to planning and zoning in Haring Cross, Pennsylvania. But she'd been one of the few students from our region to test into Templeton's elite Hartley Honors Program, and even though they had to pay to send her to an out-of-district school,
Mr. and Mrs. Reiser had ponied up without hesitation. When I broached the subject of attending Templeton to my parents, strictly...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?